Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Now listen, cadet. I've got a job for you. See this button? Don't touch it! It's the history eraser button, you fool!
So what'll happen?
That's just it. We don't know. Maybe something bad. Maybe something good. I guess we'll never know. Cause you're going to guard it. You won't touch it, will you?
How long can trusty Cadet Stimpy hold out? How can he possibly resist the diabolical urge to push the button that could erase his very existence? Will his tortured mind give in to its uncontrollable desires? Can he withstand the temptation to push the button that even now beckons him ever closer? Will he succumb to the maddening urge to eradicate history at the mere push of a single button? The beautiful, shiny button! The jolly, candy-like button! Will he hold out, folks? Can he hold out?
No, I can't!
Tune in next week as...
It is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of April of the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day, and drawing near that ye might be amused and informed on this Monday. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, broadcasting to you high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. We are live in the plushly appointed yet not already ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. It is April 4th, 2011. And 11, if you'd like to join us today via the telephone, by God, you can do it. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. With your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have on your brain this Monday. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. I know it sounded like I said you can emu if you like. And I guess you can. You can
emu if you want to.
See, now, and I wasn't going to do that. That popped into my head, and I immediately discarded that as something that we shouldn't do. And yet, it's been done. It's out there. That bell can't be unrung, Don. What have you done? All right. Anywho, if you want to email, you can do that. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed as well. That is Don, D-A-W-N, don@rickemerson.com. Oh, my God. Okay, hold on a second. I got to write something down.
Okay.
I got to make a note to myself because I just had the most absurd chain of thoughts that entered my brain that resulted in me remembering something that I was going to do this weekend that I didn't do that I got to do so now everybody can be amused by it.
Okay.
Hold on a second. Wait.
We'll all just wait here while you make a note to yourself about something.
I don't know. It's going to be worth it. The payoff is going to be...
Okay.
The payoff is going to be sufficient to warrant this momentary interruption.
Hold on.
All right.
All right.
And here's the thing. Here's the train of thoughts in my head just now. It was the second time that I said email, and it came out sounding like emu, and it was the way you just sort of looked up at me with one arched eyebrow. And then I said, Dawn can be emailed, but again, in my head, then I was just hearing an echo of emu every time I said email. Yeah. And then I was merging the word emu with looking at you, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it was like I was looking at you while in my head the word emu was being said. And then I was thinking of you being emued, and I thought, well, what does that mean, you can emu Dawn Taylor? And I thought, well, that sounds borderline perverse. Then I began thinking about Catherine the Great, of course.
Well, yeah, as you do.
And so then that triggered a thought of, so this Saturday, I just had the most amazing experience, which I captured in a series of photographs, which I was going to put online with a series of accompanying and amusing captions.
These photographs of you having some sort of sexual congress with an animal?
Not me so much, but a lamp that I saw at a knick-knack store in Northeast. So I'll get to it in just a second. No, at no point was any actual human having relations with any one of God's four-legged creatures.
Are emus endangered in any way?
I don't hope not, because I had some emu jerky a few weeks ago, to be complicit in their eradication.
Because I was thinking that if they were, then Google, the people at Google, should spend millions of dollars and sort of adopt the animal and save it and then change its name to Gmu.
Okay. They could just change its name to the Google. What if they just did that like the ultimate corporate branding? In other words, they said, what if Google, because they've got, seemingly infinite amount of money and time and resources, and they got a whole brainiac trust there of guys who just sit around in a room. And I get the feeling if you were to walk into Google, it is like the thing you said, where it's just, like your brain floating in a tub of goo, with a bunch of electrodes stuck into it. I get the feeling that when you join the brain trust at Google, it really is a brain trust, that they actually just... That it's sort of like it's like that place in the Matrix or that room in V where they stored Michael Donovan's kid, and he's just a whole endless warehouse full of people that are jammed into sort of photoelectric outlets, and then they've got big tubes coming in and out of their body, and it's just their brain power is being siphoned off into some sort of central processing unit, like deep in the heart of the Googleplex. Google's got a lot of money, so what they ought to do is Google should tell the government, look, you give us an animal, you pick something that's endangered. It's the emu. It's the California condor. It's the whatever. It's the spotted tree hopping slug. Whatever, yeah. And we'll save it. We, Google, will step in and do what the government clearly cannot do. We will save the animal from extinction, and we will bring its numbers back to a sustainable.
Polar bears, for example, because everyone loves polar bears.
Right. You say we're going to make sure that we'll bring it back to sustainable levels. We'll make sure we will quadruple or whatever the number it is that there needs to, the bare minimum that needs to exist for the animal to maintain itself in the future. Except in exchange, it's no longer the polar bear. It's the Google bear.
The Google bear. Which is adorable.
Seriously.
Right there, the Google bear.
And then they just do that to the government. They put that offer on the table, go, bam, walk away, and just say, there you go. That's the offer.
That is a brilliant idea.
You pick an animal, we'll save it, but it's the Google bear from now on. I want a Google bear already. I don't even know what it looks like. I want the likeness of one that I can just hold at my home on long winter nights to feel less alone. All right, well, in any event, it's the very odd energy in the air today. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's Monday. It's 503-505-6964. You can email Dawn Taylor at DAWN at rickemerson.com. You can do that to me as well at rick@rickemerson.com. Text box open on the website at rickemerson.com. And, of course, the Skype name is Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username, Rick Emerson Show. I'll get to this photo essay here in just a second. I don't have time to post it all. I'll do it after the show. But we just went to the most fascinating and horrific place on Saturday, where I saw, among other things, I swear to God, a ceramic lamp which depicted a woman about to have relations with a horse. And it wasn't like she was like a what do you call it? Like a, not a taurine. What do you call it? Like a, what's the,
equine?
It's not a, it's a minotaur.
Oh, yeah.
What's the other thing? Is that a minotaur, the half horse? Or is it a centaur?
No, that's a half bull. A centaur.
She wasn't a centaur. She was very, I think she seemed very demonstrably a human woman, and he was just, a horse. Horse. And it's, but they looked like they were just about to get it on.
Did you buy this lamp?
No, it was $29. Oh. Lara actually pointed out, she said it's almost worth buying. Almost. But it's just the most insane series of photographs that I took at the place.
What would have been your financial ceiling for that? If it was $20, would you have bought it?
If it had been 15 or below.
Okay.
And I would have, but here's the thing. It would have been 15 or below, but that would have come with the stipulation that we use it here in the studio.
Well, yeah.
I would have set it up, and it would have just, you know, so Anna Griffin could be even more uncomfortable when she comes in. I would have put it right where the jack-o'-lantern is.
Oh, yeah.
In any event, coming up today, Religious Nutcase Watch, Penis Watch. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, will join us here in Escoche. And Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
The owner of the oil rig that blew up in the Gulf of Mexico last year is giving bonuses to its executives.
Hooray!
Yay! A home invasion suspect leaves behind a T-shirt with his photo on it. And a man is arrested for stealing a donut truck.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And I've got some pages on the printer, if you would hand them to me after you're done zipping up your warm hoodie
I think they solved that problem of being too hot in the studio.
Yeah, I know. And I wore something light today because I figured it was going to be super warm, as per always.
Well, that's one of those things where it's like, as I'm getting ready, I'm getting dressed in the morning, I thought, well, again, I'll dress in layers. And then, of course, with this sensible, this sort of gazoo-like voice in my head appeared and said, no, just wear a T-shirt. It's always too warm in the studio. I swear to you, I think it's actually going to begin snowing in here. So, in any event. All right. Well, now that I'm ensconced in yet another layer of clothing, it is 503-505-6964, so that's all on the way today. Religious Nutcase Watch, Penis Watch, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, will be joining us via the telephone. Aaron Duran will be joining us tomorrow with the Week in Geek. Normally, Monday is the day when we do that. Normally, Monday is Week in Geek Day. But we will do that tomorrow. I think he's off working for the man. Here's why it doesn't matter, though. It's not that I don't treasure and relish Aaron's company, but Aaron has a lot of leeway and flexibility with me today, because you know what I got from him on Saturday? I got a text message of Aaron somewhere. I believe he was in Woodburn with his wife, the lovely Jen. He was in Woodburn, and he took a photograph of himself in a Mexican grocery holding what, Don?
Cranky?
That's right, Cranky.
Oh.
He found two boxes of Cranky. So he's keeping one for himself, one for me, for Rick.
That's
so
very nice. Well, I'm going to tell you the, because Cranky is what? Chocolate-covered what?
Chocolate-covered cornflakes.
Well, the new flavor of ice cream from Ben & Jerry's has chocolate-covered potato chip clusters in it.
I don't know that I want that. That may be a quasi-want. It doesn't, I don't know.
Tried it yet, but it's...
Chocolate-covered potato just seems like it might be bad.
I don't know.
What is it called?
It's called Late Night Snack, I think. It's like
just running out of names for things.
Well, there was
crap to eat when you're high.
Well, there was the Colbert one.
Americone Dream.
Yeah, and this one's for Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, I see.
So
all
it's
right.
Late Night Snack.
What is your current favorite Ben & Jerry's flavor?
It's either the American Dream or I am still a fan of Chunky Monkey.
I didn't know they made Chunky Monkey anymore. I thought they got rid of that.
Oh, did they stop? Well, I don't buy Ben & Jerry's that often.
Isn't
that
banana?
I may have missed it. Yeah, it's banana with... See, you wouldn't like it.
Yeah, I can't get with
it. But
that.
It's banana with little chocolate chips in it and walnuts.
Bastards. You know, they got rid of that Rainforest Crunch years ago, and they've never brought it back, and I just have held a grudge about that for the longest time.
Do they still make the ones that are, like, two different kinds mixed together?
Like the twisted
whatever?
Yeah,
because I liked those.
Know.
And also the ones that had, like, the core of caramel down the middle. Those were always...
I've never even seen that.
Yeah, I don't think they make that anymore either. They bring out these fascinating things, and then they just sort of disappear.
And then they take them away. They dangle them in front of you just long enough to whet your appetite, and then they then it's like Purplesaurus Rex. Then it's just, it vanishes to some sort of beverage graveyard. You never get it back.
I did have something delicious this weekend, though, that I had never even considered eating. And, the whole long part of the story is that I was out looking for the stuff to refinish my ukulele, because I need the stuff called True Oil, which they use for refinishing gun stocks. And you, like, put a layer of it on, and then you let it dry for a couple hours, then you buff it down with sandpaper, then you put another layer on, you build up the layers, and you get this nice, hard, shiny finish, and that's what I want for my ukulele. But the thing is, I couldn't find it anywhere, and I went to the hardware store, and they didn't have it, and then I went to Big Five Sporting Goods, because I figured it's for doing stuff to guns, and they have gun stuff at the sporting goods store. They didn't have it. I get on the phone, and I call, like, a gun store, and they say, go to Bi-Mart. And I complained about it on Facebook, too. And then, like, three of our...
Bi-Mart's full of guns.
Three people said, Bi-Mart!
Yeah.
All things gun, go to Bi-Mart.
Yeah.
So Patrick and I are on our way to Bi-Mart. We're in Tigard, and we're driving up 99. And in the sort of, like, the McRib is back moment, I go, Sonic! Because I saw the sign for the Sonic drive-in. So Patrick says, Don, does that mean you want to go to Sonic? And I was like, well, Duh, yes.
Of course.
He says, you're not five. Just say, Don, just say, Patrick, I want to go to Sonic. Just don't yell Sonic and start hopping up and down.
I don't think I've ever eaten at a Sonic.
Sonic is really, really, it's they try to replicate the old, like, sort of drive-in thing. The thing is, it's better quality food than your normal fast food. But the joy of it is that you pull into these bays, and then they've got the menu board. And once you figure out what you want, you punch a button and you order into the speaker. And then somebody like skates out on roller skates
awesome.
And brings you your food.
That's
at your
fantastic.
Car. So, but they have like hot dogs, and we both got hot dogs. But they had, and this was so exciting, and it was so delicious. Chili cheese tater tots.
Now, that seems like a thing that I ought to have had at this point in my life, because I like chili, I like cheese, I like the tots, but I don't think I've ever seen a place list all of those together in one glorious dish on the menu.
And the thing about Sonic is they actually, unlike most of your fast food driving through places, their chili is actually quite good, because they have the Coney Island hot dogs and stuff that they do chili
sometimes
on.
Sometimes they say, you know, places will say chili, and it's just some sort of, it's just like a brown sort of sludgy liquid. It's like that 7-Eleven chili.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, the Sonic chili is actually pretty good, but yeah, we ordered this thing, and it was just this wonderful thing of freshly cooked, nice and crispy tater tots with chili and cheese all over it. And it was so good. And then somebody brings it to our car on roller skates.
Did they really skate to your car?
Yeah.
Was it like the old car, not a car park, but you know what I mean, where it's like you know, it's like there's the A&W whatever, and then there's just the long sort of thin roof that just goes out over the rows of cars.
Yeah.
Like an old drive, the actual like drive-in hamburger joint style.
Yeah, you pull in and there are these bays
right,
under the windows. Yeah, and then you pull up and then you can actually swipe your credit card and pay for it right there. You call them on the buzzer.
Wow.
You tell them what you want, you swipe the credit card, pay for it, and then somebody roller skates out and brings you your food. And then there's also somebody that just sort of works the parking lot and skates from car to car with a tray and comes up and goes, do you need any sauces?
Jesus.
Like if you need any ketchup or whatever. And they have little dog biscuits in case you have your dog with you.
And then you and Potsy go off to the school dance together.
But yeah, we had hot dogs. I had one with like sauerkraut and onions on it. And then I had cherry limeade to drink. It really was. It was just like the 50s. But yeah, chili cheese tater tots. And I've got to tell you, most delicious freaking
Sonic.
Thing ever.
All right, I'm making a note right now to do that. So, because I'm always on the, and the ukulele seems to be under construction for a long time. I got the feeling that it was, when you said that it was some assembly was required, that really was just sort of like, it was just like a musical Ravel model where there was just like two pieces that needed to go together and then a string and then it was done.
Well, first of all, no, that's what I thought too, and it turned out to not be the case. It turned out that it was actually an honest to God musical instrument.
You have to get like a woodworking degree.
And I need it. And so even though the kit itself was gifted to me for my birthday, so far I've spent like $45 on supplies to like, you know, clamps and wood glue and various things that I need to like actually finish it and make it. So, but all I have to do now is I have to do these last couple of coats of finish. Then I have to glue on whatever the little thing is that the strings attach to. And then I can string it and put the pegs on it and I can learn to play the ukulele. But I needed the stuff and I couldn't find it in any place. But by Mark, apparently, if you need anything gun related.
No, Court and I have talked about this a lot, actually. This is Court was actually the one who brought me around on Bi-Mart as opposed to Costco during zombie apocalypse, because he noted two things. One is that everybody thinks of Costco, because it's just a more widely known store. Two, Bi-Mart sells guns. Now, that might you might think that that's a problem, except that because of the guns, Bi-Mart has the gun cage. So there is, in effect, a keep in the center of the store.
Yeah.
Because the thing about Costco is it's got skylights, and then, it's not as much zombies you have to worry about as it is other survivors. But he noted at Bi-Mart, everybody can just retreat to the sort of steel mesh fortress, you know, in a worst-case scenario, and Costco doesn't have any place like that. Costco just has, like, the vision center, and there's nothing you can... There's nowhere to hold out there. So, no, Bi-Mart is a fantastic place. But you have to have a membership there, I think, is the
deal.
Yeah,
but it's $5.
Oh, you can get... So you don't... It's not like you have to get, like... You don't have to, like, be masoned in by somebody who's already a member or whatever.
No, you don't have to have some kind of, like... It's not kind of some kind of faux, you know, exclusion thing like they have it at Costco.
It's just like, it's like a surcharge.
Which is like Costco. It, they pretend that you have to have some kind of an in. But I mean, honestly, if you have a AAA card, you can join Costco. But Bi-Mart, they're just upfront about it. It's like, you want to be a member? Here, give us $5.
So it's a private club the way that bars in Salt Lake are private clubs.
Yeah, pretty,
it's a private club that it costs you $2 to join.
Yeah.
Because at Costco, I think at one point, Costco is sort of confusing because I think at Costco at one point was like actually it was sort of an exclusive, like you did have to be kind of grandfathered in or something, you had to know somebody who knew a guy.
The company you worked for had to like belong, or you had to belong to some kind of an organization of some sort that, you know, but you could get around that by if you belong to AAA, you could do AAA. Now I'm pretty sure that anybody can join Costco.
It was like for a while, if you wanted a Gmail account, it was like somebody you knew that had Gmail had to send you an invite or whatever, which is this sort of like, it's this kind of like false scarcity that companies do just to make you desire the product more, which of course, which completely works because I just pestered everybody I knew for a Gmail account, which I then never used. I just sort of like wanted it for the same reason that I wanted to have a Costco membership. So we just, so we nagged Lara's mom about it, like until she gave it, which I don't think we've ever actually, I think we've used like once in our lives. No, Bi-Mart is really, is a fantastic place. It really is a,
And they really do have just amazingly good deals on a really sort of insane variety of things.
And so this was Saturday or Sunday?
This is Saturday.
Okay, so I will say this. So Saturday, while you were eating your the wonderful chili cheese cover, the tater tots at Bi-Mart on Saturday. So my Saturday was, so I woke up, I got to bed real late Friday night for some reason. I forget why, but I had gone to bed fairly late, but it's like Lara got to bed even later because she was, I think she went to work and then she, I don't know, she went out with her, you know, went out with some of her workmates or whatever for a late night beverage or something after tending to the sick all day. So I was in bed when she got home, but I woke up on Saturday and she left me this note just telling me that in no uncertain terms, she didn't order me, but she basically, she strongly, strongly encouraged me to not turn on my computer, not check my email, not turn on my iPhone, whatever, for the bulk of Saturday, so that she felt that I was reaching some sort of critical mass in terms of. I think she feared that I was reaching some sort of all work and no play makes Jack an axe swinger kind of a state of my life. So she said, really, I strongly suggest as a mental health professional that you do not. And she actually, she this didn't take the form of an order, but it was actually the series of like sort of sweet notes that she left all over the house, like everywhere where I could conceivably do work, like one leading into my office by my laptop, like one where I charge my phone. You know, like one on her computer in the living room, like one on the Xbox. I think the one on the Xbox just said, if you must use the internet today, use it to kill zombies. That is all. You know, and that's like, so she encouraged me just to take it sort of a day away from email and from whatever, which was fine because I don't do that very often. So she and I just sort of hung out for most of the day, and I used one of those, what do you call them? One of those books, that the old folks are always talking about. So I sat around. We just had a very low key day. But she was getting ready to go out with some of her friends that night, and I think they ended up having some kind of an ad hoc poker game, which she then said, and it kind of came together really quickly. And she regretted that it was so because she didn't have a chance to invite you. She specifically mentioned that she didn't get a chance to invite you because I don't think it was. I think they were just going to get together and go dancing or something, and then somebody had like I don't know. Somebody had some sort of an ailment or impediment, and they couldn't go dancing, and so they ended up staying in, and what are we going to do? Well, I guess we'll just play poker. And it was already like 11:30 at night, so there was no time to really invite people, so they just had to play poker. This is the living.
That's nice that she thought of me, though.
Well, and here's the reason why she thought of you. You know, not that she doesn't enjoy the pleasure of your company, but don't take this the wrong way, but all things being equal, she probably wouldn't want you there because you're a pretty skilled card player, and normally you figure that she just wants to take everybody to the cleaners, right? She just wants to, you know, hork everybody, so, you know, just like, well, why have Dawn there and you have to divide up the pot? Apparently, and I'm not singling anybody out as such with this, but she said that the reason, I know I'm all over the place with this story, but she said that the reason that she really wanted you there Saturday night for this poker game that she had with some of her lady friends is that apparently not everybody in the card game was that experienced a poker player, and I think they were playing Texas Hold'em, just because that sort of seems to be the game that most people in a room will know because it had so much exposure on TV and whatever.
Yeah.
So apparently she was having some sort of an issue with some of the other girls who were playing poker in that they didn't necessarily believe some of the rules as she was describing them. So I guess it's that thing where she was trying to explain how you play it, and apparently some of the rules just seemed non-intuitive or confusing, And so some of the other people who were not poker players, but who had sort of learned for the purpose of that evening, or who maybe had played a time or two in the past, but had opted, who had cash, and so of course were welcome into the game, were then disputing the way that the game worked later on. So she found herself at one point late in the evening, and she said this is when she really, really just more than anything wanted to click her ruby slippers together and have you magically appear there. I think just to start punching people.
Because that's what I'm good for, really, is muscle.
You're the enforcer. She apparently at one point was having to explain to someone who I will not identify that, no, if two people ended up having the same five-card hand, like, I guess at one point there were two full houses.
Uh-huh.
She was having to very patiently explain, I think over and over and over again, that you did not, in fact, then go to, like, the sixth card or the seventh card as, like, a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And she said that she finally got them to accept that, but that they, quote, didn't really believe her, and you could tell. So... And then the worst part, though, the worst part of all of this is that she ended up losing money over the course, like over the course of the evening. She ended up losing at one point to somebody, and I won't identify who this is either, because it would just sow the seeds of discontent. But she ended up losing to somebody who was betting wildly without having even looked at their cards.
Oh God!
And it was that thing of, you know, of just go, well, I'll just play this one blind. I'm all in, and just playing against somebody who just. I don't know if they were drunk, or if they were just feeling especially irascible, and they were just playing like a mad person without having even checked their cards. And then she ended up losing, and she came home in the red for the night. And so it was an unpleasant card playing evening. But she said that she really very rarely has she so desperately wished that you were somewhere. But in preparation for this, while you were eating your meal at Sonic, in preparation for going over and just hanging out with some of her girlfriends, she made a huge batch of brownies using that all edges brownie pan, which we were gifted by.
Yes, that we received from.
We received from. I am prepositionally challenged today. We were gifted with by Seamus at Christmas time. I can tell you, it's fantastic.
It is. It really is.
Because she's made some brownies with that before, but I haven't really had a chance to try them. It really is. That's just as good as it seems like it's going to be.
And it's not just that you get, like, you know, three edges on every one of your brownies, but it's a really good heavy-duty pan, so it just bakes really evenly and perfectly. It's a really brilliant pan.
It really is. It's great. The one thing about that all edges brownie pan is you got to, in our experience, we found out that the brownies cook a little faster and a little crisper than you might expect, which is fine for me because I tend to choose things that will be a little crisper, a little more well done than the average person. So she came home with I think a third of the pan still left because people brought a lot of food and there was just, you know, more than was going to be eaten. And I sat there and in one sitting, I just consumed everything that was left in the pan. Here's the thing. I don't even know how many brownies I had because I didn't even bother to cut them into squares. I just lifted out, like as one contiguous piece, I just lifted out this continental crust of brownies, just the entire, just the rest of whatever was in the pan, and just ate it in one sort of, like I was eating a habit trail made of chewy, cakey goodness.
I kind of did a similar thing in that I made cookies Saturday morning for Big Ass Sandwiches, and I made a bunch of the big triple chocolate cookies, and then I had quite a few left over. So, like, yesterday morning and this morning, that was breakfast. And, of course, late last night when I was, like, getting ready to go to bed, but then sitting there, I'm a little peckish. Cookies.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat, and of course, I'm only going to eat one.
Sure.
Of course, it's the size of, you know, my head because of the giant cookies, but quite the brownie pan, I'm looking forward to. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I want to try making other bar cookies besides the brownies in the
pan. Like a chocolate chip cookie bar?
Well, yeah, and like one of my signature desserts that people request all the time. It's called an apple pie bar, and it's a shortbread crust. And then it has this delicious sliced apple and cinnamon filling, like the middle of an apple pie. And then a real thick layer on top of, like, the crumbly sort of French apple crust on the top. And then you bake it as, like, in a big, just a big thing, and you serve it as bars. And so you get all of the best thing of pie, the really delicious, like, cookie crust and the crumbly top, and just enough filling. you know, because really the crumbly sweet stuff on top is the best part.
That's what you
of
want,
apple
really.
Pie
that's
anyway.
Well, that's the muffin top of the crumbly, you know, of like the apple crisper, apple cobbler
right.
world. Yeah, awesome.
So I've needed to try that in the all edges pan.
By the way, somebody wants you to know that emus are actually not endangered and they have been domesticated.
Huh.
So you could get yourself an emu just to, you know, have around the house to tell your troubles to. You know, like if that's the sort of thing
so
you
want. I imagine they're like ostriches and they're probably just horrible.
You're
they're
like,
just mean and horrible.
Or they're one of those creatures like llamas that just, they spit a lot and they hiss at you.
Yeah.
We just come home and he's just, you know, sitting on the couch going, you, what do you want? So, let's see. So we got the Religious Nutcase Watch coming up today, Peanuts Watch coming up today, Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian coming up.
I have a interpretive reading of a Facebook posting at some point.
Fantastic.
Craigslist posting.
I'll get the music bed ready for that. And then I said that I would mention this thing about my dog. I guess I'll just do it now. I will. There's really no larger point to this story except to say that. So my wife has been doing some. She's been doing some sort of decorating around the house, and that she painted one of our rooms, which meant that she had to then I don't know change the covering on the sofa. And once she changed the covering on the sofa, she had to change the pillows and whatever. And so we're. We try to be a thrifty people. We're just, I'm just a colossal cheapskate. And so I like to think that I've passed a little bit of that along to her. So her whole thing, instead of getting new pillows, her thing is to recover the existing pillows. And that works out better sometimes than others. Here's when it doesn't work out so well. When she gets this idea in her head on Saturday, and I think I was gone or I was like taking a nap or something because I just saw the aftermath of this. I didn't really see the actual event itself take place. I just remember returning home on Saturday afternoon from somewhere. I think I'd gone to the store, I'd gone to the post office to mail something or whatever. And I pulled into the driveway, and there just seemed to be... You know, it's like when summer comes around, and you just get cottonwood blowing all through the neighborhood because cottonwood trees are shedding, you know, sort of...
Oh, I know it.
They're just blowing around through the entire... So it looked like cottonwood had filled... You know, like our street was just under siege by that. But I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense because it's like it's just now April, so there wouldn't be cottonwood in the air just yet. What apparently had happened is she had gotten the idea in her head somehow that... We needed to take the several small pillows on the sofa and put them instead into two large pillows. And that the way to do that was to transfer all of the feather stuffing from the pillows from, like, seven smallish pillows into two large pillows. And the best way to transfer the feather stuffing was just to take scissors and cut the pillows open in the living room.
Oh, yeah. No.
And she'd never done that before. And so immediately... And so the house, I mean, even now, and that was Saturday, and there isn't, I mean, you can't go anywhere in the house now where there isn't, it's like that Roadrunner cartoon where Wile E. Coyote just, you know, he takes all the sticks of dynamite and just puts wings on them, and, you know, and that throughout the rest of the cartoon, occasionally winged pieces of dynamite are just flying into the frame and blowing up. Everywhere in our house now, it's just filled with feathers. It's just, I pulled into the driveway, and there were just feathers blowing around in the driveway and in the garden of our house, like for reasons that I can't quite identify. But so now there are feathers everywhere covering every square inch of the house. I mean, more or less, you just there's sort of, you know, just like in little patches, and they're sort of floating through the air with the greatest of ease everywhere you walk in our home, which means that every now and again, I will catch one of the dogs sort of just going, "Kah!" and just coughing out a plume of feathers, because dogs aren't that bright, and they don't really understand what's food and what isn't sometimes, especially Max. And so, and it's the thing where I catch Max sort of going, and licking something, and I'll go over and I go, no, and I never catch him in time to stop him. I get over there just as he is swallowing a mouthful of feathers, which means that like 10 or 15 seconds later, he then begins hacking up this sort of feathery hairball, which sort of floats around in the living room, so...
Imagine the feathers would like make Philo very nervous.
Yeah, they so we started doing this competition last night. Not even a competition, but just sort of a escalating it to see what is the smallest, most harmless thing that Philo is afraid of. And we started with feathers. I was suggesting a piece of thread, and he was in fact. So I took a spool and I was dangling a piece of thread, and he ran out of the room in terror. Our next step is to get some of those, like, for kids, like the blowing bubbles, and to see if he will run away from blowing bubbles, and I know he will. So we're trying to actually determine the smallest, tiniest, most utterly harmless thing that will still cause him to run away. At some point, I'm going to try to conjure up a ladybug and see if I can get him to run away from a ladybug, which I don't think will be that difficult at all. He did, in fact, run away from a small puff of white feathers that were floating through the air in the kitchen yesterday. But Max, of course, just thinks that there's some sort of chocolatey treat and just, you know. And so then all day today, I've just been, it's that sort of like, You know, and then there's just these sort of like dog spit covered feathers kind of floating around in the house. It's all very vile. Well, let's do a couple stories. We'll take a break on the other side of this. We'll talk to Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian, and later on, Religious Nutcase Watch, Penis Watch, and more. Hey, kids, look over there. It's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
The owner of the Gulf of Mexico oil rig that exploded last year, killing 11 workers, says its safety record since then has been outstanding. So they're handing out bonuses to their executives.
We have gone 75 days without an environment-destroying meltdown.
Jefferson Parish, Louisiana Councilman Chris Roberts says Transocean shouldn't be proud of themselves for triggering the worst oil spill in U.S. history.
A lot of things that were said during this spill and this disaster that would lead you to believe that some of these companies really need to fine-tune their public relations. They've become their own worst enemy in some of the absurd comments and remarks that they've made. We dealt with that with BP last summer, now Transocean.
So this is a sort of, well, they haven't done it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. They haven't, you know, ruined
They've
anything.
Learned from their mistakes.
A man arrested of stealing a donut truck because he was tired of walking is being held in the Marion County, Florida jail on charges of grand theft auto and marijuana
possession.
Sorry,
where?
Florida.
Wow, sorry. That was loud.
Jail records show 20-year-old Randall Travis Roberts of Davenport was arrested Thursday. He's being held on $10,500 bond. It wasn't immediately known if he has an attorney. Ocala police say Roberts stole a truck filled with 388 boxes of Krispy Kreme donuts. He told officers he was tired of walking and wanted to sleep. Police also found 10 grams of marijuana in a plastic bag in the car, but he said the drugs didn't belong to him. It is not known if he consumed any of the donuts.
And it contained how many donuts?
388 boxes
okay.
of donuts.
All right.
So that's a fair amount of donuts. Let me do my religious nutcase watch while we're waiting.
Pardon me. Just finishing a mouthful of a tasty beverage.
Okay.
Ah, there we go. Ah, fantastic. Here's your religious nutcase watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Don Taylor with your Religious Nutcase Watch for Monday.
The Catholic Church is warning that a surge in Satanism fueled by the internet has led to a sharp rise in demand for exorcists.
Fantastic.
Exorcism is the subject of a 6-day conference being held this week at the Regina Apostolorum Pontifical University in Rome, which is under the Vatican's authority. Carlo Clamati, a member of the university who specializes in the dangers posed to young people by Satanism, yes, that's his specialty.
Also, his name is Clamati.
Clamati.
Okay.
Yeah. He says, the internet makes it much easier than in the past to find information about Satanism. In just a few minutes, you can contact Satanist groups and research occultism. The conference is not about how to become an exorcist. It's to share information about exorcism, Satanism, and sects. It's to give help to families and priests. There's a particular risk for young people who are in difficulties or who are emotionally fragile.
Well, so really the overriding message of the story seems to be that if the time or the effort required to become a Satanist was preventing me from doing so before, those obstacles have been
right.
removed by the internet. So now I could do it in less time and with less effort than I might have imagined.
Right.
Okay.
The object of the seminars was to scrutinize the phenomenon of Satanism with seriousness and scientific rigor,
yes.
avoiding a superficial or sensational approach, he said. The conference brought together more than 60 Catholic clergy, as well as doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, teachers, and youth workers to discuss how to combat the dangers of devil worship.
Boy, you know, you saw, in Bigger Than Jesus, is that whole section where I talk about, you know, the Satan scare of the 80s, which I really do miss in a strange way because it was an entertaining time, if nothing else. The idea that, because you probably were this way as well, although maybe not. This might have been... Not even so much an age thing, Dom, but as a culture or as a regional thing. I don't know if they did this in California. Did they have people coming to your school and lecturing you about Satan?
No, they didn't. But it affected my best friend. After her first divorce, she sort of delved back into the church and became, you know, she was like a very cool Christian, but a Christian nonetheless. She was the cool Christian who was still like a punk rock chick
right.
and ran the youth groups and stuff. But still, she was taking Bible study and doing all this stuff. And we were having a coffee once at one afternoon at a coffee thing and at a coffee shop. And I said something I jokingly about like the Satanism thing. And she goes, oh, no, that's really true. There are Satanist cults and they do recruit people. And I just looked at her and I went, huh? Because, you know, she had never said anything. So,
you don't seem crazy.
So obviously just completely bonkers before.
Right.
And I just said, and my brain just kind of went, don't discuss this with her. Just let it go. And so I just went, yeah, okay.
That's one of those things where you really have to fight your own impulse to go like, it's not true. It's don't.
Yeah. And I just thought, you know. No good can come of us talking of this.
Yeah, when I was in school, I remember being in social studies, and this was in high school, and at a public high school, no less. I mean, it wasn't even like I was going to Catholic school, where during, I guess it was during social studies class, but that's also where we talked about, you know, societal ills and troubles. And so they used, for the Kennewick Police Department, they would send these cops in who would talk to us about the growing menace of satanic cults in the suburbs. And they would just have these photographs of, like, you know, some guy's barn, you know, where a bunch of kids had obviously just gone to, like, smoke out and have teenage sex or whatever. And while they were there, like, somebody would just write, like, Ozzy on the walls with spray paint. And so, therefore, it became, like, a place where satanic covens were practicing, you know, because somebody had left a bottle of Boone's Farm, you know, behind. And they, you know, they believed that it was some sort of a ritualistic device of some kind. And anyway, and so they would just – but they would have cops actually come and talk to us about this as though it were, like, an actual thing, like an actual menace. And it really is – you know, it's not like the 80s were that long ago either. I really do wish that I could go back somehow and just ask them, like, what is going on in your head? Like, what is, you can't actually believe this. So, and Laura and I have talked about this because I know that it wasn't just Washington, because growing up in Utah, this sort of thing, you would hear this from people too. And she, she knew, friends who claimed that, you know, when they were young, you know, that their parents were involved in satanic cults, and that they had, narrowly escaped being abused by or drawn into rituals, conducted by satanic cults. And this is, you know, again, this is not like 70 years ago. I mean, this is like when we were kids, which seems really weird.
Yeah, and they actually quote a member of the Vatican's Congregation for the Causes of Saints who says that while the number of genuine cases of possession by the devil remains relatively small, quote, we must be on guard because occult and Satanist practices are spreading a great deal, in part with the help of the internet and new technologies that make it easier to access these rituals. You know, your iSatanist app your phone.
There should totally be one of those. There should be a, because didn't we say that the other day there was like some sort of a confession app that had been blessed by the Vatican?
I had a question. I thought of something the other day because I was listening to NPR or something, and it was like some radical Islamist killing some guys for like burning copies of the Quran. And I thought, you know, okay, I at one point downloaded, because destroying the Quran is, you know, an offense that's punishable by death. I thought I had downloaded iQuran onto my iPhone, and then I didn't realize I wasn't going to ever use it for anything.
So I deleted it.
So does that mean I could be killed? Does that count?
Oh, I wonder who we can call to ask about that. I wonder if there's some, cleric somewhere that we can, like, you know, like a number we can call, and give us the verdict on it.
Does everybody who deleted iQuran from their iPhone, are they now, should they be punished by death?
I don't know, but now I'm distracted by a voice in my head going, iQuran so far away. I don't know why. And this is all true. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio program. So there you go. So Satanists on the march apparently through your neighborhood, Mr. and Mrs. America. Beware. There's your religious nutcase watch. We'll have Ryan White joining us here in just one moment from the Oregonian. Oh, good God almighty. It's a strange world. It really is. We got to find out because if it turns out that you've committed some just unforgivable sin or some heresy or something, like, you're gonna have to start doing the show from home.
I know. I could be the subject of a jihad.
Like you showing up wearing a Muhammad shirt or something. So you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on the day, we got your penis watch, and also somebody has a question about the. I don't mean this in code. Somebody has a question about your ukulele, Don. So we'll. So we'll get to make sure not to let anybody touch your ukulele.
Words that start with U that belong to Don that we have discussed on this show. Ukulele, uterus.
Uvula. So we'll get to that here in just a short while and so forth. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, music editor from the Oregonian and all-around man of the world, Mr. Ryan White. Hello, sir. How are you on this Monday?
I'm good. The ukulele is hot right now, apparently.
Is it? Now, well, Portland being Portland, it seems like there's probably an all-ukulele Christmas chorus or something that's it's accepting membership right now.
You know, I think I'm trying to remember. There is a band somewhere, and it might be here, called Neutral Uke Hotel. As opposed to Neutral Milk Hotel, but Eddie Vedder has his upcoming ukulele solo album and an accompanying tour.
Are you making that up?
No, Eddie Vedder. When I got the release the other day, I like to imagine 1992 or 2011 sending a message back to 1992 saying, hey, that guy, yeah, the guy that's, you know, the reason that you're wearing those flannel shirts now and stuff right now, he's going to do a ukulele album, 2011.
Hey, let me ask you this, Don, about the ukulele. You mentioned something about this last week, but I can't remember what the actual answer was. Is the ukulele, would you say, easier to learn than the guitar? Because it's got, only a handful of strings, but the banjo's tough to play.
Yeah, I'm assuming it would be easier than the guitar. The reason I actually picked the ukulele is that I did want to learn to play the banjo, but I realized it was going to be way, way too hard.
No, the banjo's easier.
Is it really?
It's in an open tuning, so you can really do almost anything, and it sounds okay.
Well, sure. Now you tell me.
Nah, fail.
So it's in an open G, so you can, like, without having any idea what you're doing, you can kind of play a banjo.
On the other hand, the ukulele is very portable, though.
That's true.
It is.
No, it's true. And I would imagine it's probably now. How much does your average ukulele run? Because a banjo can be very pricey.
A ukulele can be very expensive. I mean, you can get, like with a guitar, you can get an inexpensive one for around $50. But they go, a custom ukulele can cost like $1,500.
Do you live in fear, though? Here's what I would be afraid of if I were to begin playing the ukulele, which ever since seeing Colton a couple years ago, I feel like I'm pronouncing it wrong because he gave it some like weird, native Hawaiian, like ukulele. Pronunciation with like a bunch of apostrophes inserted throughout the word clearly. And so I just, but what are you going to do? I would live in fear, though, if I played the ukulele, that I would write some deep, spiritual, soulful song that came from deep within me and just conveyed all my thoughts on the human condition as a person. But then it's like whenever I played it for people, I would just look retarded, because it's like I'm playing it on a ukulele. And they would just begin to snicker. And I'd be like, no, it's about the universe as we understand it and the nature of God and man's existential horror at life. But meaning you play it, it's all like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it just seems like you ought to be like cooking a pig in a hole somewhere. So, maybe that's a fear that I don't share with anybody else. Hello, Ryan White. What is going on in the world of Portland music and culture, my friend?
Oh, we got a couple of things. I think the big thing starting this week is the Sold Out Music Festival, which is S-O-U-L apostrophe D, which, so you can still get tickets for it, despite its name, which starts Thursday and runs through, I'm looking at the schedule here in front of me, runs with shows through the 16th. But the first show is at the Crystal Ballroom, the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, which whenever I listen to them, I feel like I'm a smarter person. And it runs all the way through. I think Most Deaf at the Roseland is on the last night. I think the two shows that I'm kind of writing about to preview the entire thing are Sunday and Monday, which is Sunday night at Dante's, Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears, and then Raphael Sadiq is at the Wonder Ballroom on Monday, and both of them just have great, great new records. Sadiq's isn't out until May. But I got a copy of that the other day, and it's just going to make a lot of white people dance very awkwardly.
I was going to say, just a group called Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears. I have never heard them, don't know anything about them.
Oh, they're wonderful.
But it's like, I already go, I would have so much more soul in my life if only I owned that. I feel like just owning the record, I probably wouldn't even have to listen to it. Just it would osmose into my body, and I would suddenly become a deeper, more soulful person.
Yeah, they're great. Their new record, Scandalous, is just amazing. It's, you know, he's capable of, he's a really interesting story. I talked to him for a while on Saturday as he was motoring in the van between Columbus and Chicago. But he was, you know, he grew up basically mostly in Austin, and he was working at a pawn shop, not really doing anything, and he noticed that his musician neighbors were having more fun than he was, so he got one of the guitars from the pawn shop, and now he's 29, and he's, you know, he's capable of sounding like young James Brown or an old blues man or Iggy Pop at basically any point in Iggy Pop's career. And there's a tune on the new record that combines this old gospel group from Dallas called The Relatives. He brought them in on it, but then put them over the top of these, like, just Stooges-like, just blistering guitar riffs.
For years, and this is a thing that didn't really ever come to pass the way that I was sort of hoping it would. And this is less so now as I've become an old person, but there was a time when I with pretty good accuracy, I had a pretty good sense for how popular music was sort of going to unfold, or what trends might be in the offing, or how certain kinds of music might wax and wane. But one of the things that I was always really off on and that I was disappointed in is that there was never any sort of infusion of, like, a traditional gospel sound with contemporary, you know, whatever, rock or R&B or anything.
Yeah.
So whenever I hear that done right, I mean, that really is one of life's true pleasures, when you hear anything successfully integrated with that gospel sound.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I talked with both Raphael Sadiq and Joe Lewis about this. They're both guys who get, when people write about them, they talk about, you know, how, you know, they sound like, you know, Sadiq, it's you know, bringing back the sounds of Motown and the old Stax records, and you get a lot of the Stax stuff too with Joe Lewis's stuff. And the thing that always seems to be missed in those descriptions is just how timeless those sounds are.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way, you know, they almost point them as these kind of novelty. These novelty review acts, these, you know, retro acts, when it's anything but. I was talking to Sadiq, and he mentions offhand that he's in Paris. And I'm like, wow, there's a guy who's got it going on. He gets to be Raphael Sadiq and in Paris. That hardly seems fair.
You know, you're talking about some of those old, you know, the Stax records, like, you do, you know, listen to certain productions from certain times, and I wonder if anybody has ever really. I mean, I don't want to say like in a lab setting, but almost just laid out the acoustics or the scientific underpinning that gives those records that sound. I mean, it's not like they were all in mono or something. And there's the analog factor is probably part of it. There's a lot of things sound, you know, recording analog that don't sound that good. They don't sound that timeless. There must be something about some combination of the studio, some combination of the microphones, some combination of something, that there just is that classic sound on some of those records that people have tried to duplicate over the years, and they've just never succeeded. And I wonder if anybody's ever quantified how they did that.
No, but probably the guy to ask would be Booker T, who played on half of them. I mean, when he was at the Blues Festival last year, and he just started going into a medley of songs that he'd been involved in, you know, and, you know, worked on in the studio or co-written, and you're just like, wow. I mean, you know, you go down the line, Otis Redding tunes, you know, his own Booker T and the MG tunes, just, you know, Al Green songs, and maybe the common denominator is Booker T.
We were just talking about Otis Redding the other day for some reason, and I forget the guy's name, but the guy was the sort of the in-house drummer for a lot of those Stax recordings. Like, you listen to, I'm sorry, did I step on you there?
No.
No, okay. But the guy was sort of the in-house drummer there. You listen to, like, Mr. Pitiful, or, you know, any of those great Otis Redding songs, and there's just that drumming that is just so crisp and just so tight, and just those, I mean, and it's not flashy, it's not fancy, it's not showy, it's, you know, nobody's getting their Geddy Lee on or anything, but it's just these tiny little pickups and turnarounds that are just so perfect, and they're just flashy enough to fill what needs to be filled, and then they just lay back, and it's like there is something really, I don't even want to say, like, spiritual is the wrong way to put it, but there's some sort of vibe or some sort of feeling that gets put into those, because that drum sound is so minimalist, and yet there's just a something there, just a groove or an energy that is just impossible to duplicate. And that's a group of musicians that is every bit as deserving of some sort of a tribute, you know, just like the Motown, you know, the in-house band at Motown was. I mean, that's, you know, and history is filled with session musicians and players like that who have played on, you know, 5 million hit records. Probably nobody knows them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would, like I said, the record isn't out until May, but if anybody wants to go to Raphael Sadiq's website, he's done videos already for the title track Stone Rollin' and for a song called Radio, and man, it is just great stuff. And it has all the vibe. He played the majority of the instruments on the record. He's just one of those guys who's capable of going into the studio by himself and emerging with a record that sounds like he went in there with, you know, 20 of the best musicians you could possibly get your hands on. And
so when does this all start? You said the first date, and I missed it. When does this all begin?
The festival starts with the Preservation Hall Jazz Band on Thursday at the Crystal Ballroom, and then Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears are at Dante's on Sunday, and then Raphael Sadiq is at the Wonder Ballroom on Monday. And in between, there's, you know, Lauryn Hill's here on Saturday at the Schnitz, Big Freedia, who is a party and a half from the queen of sissy bounce from New Orleans at Holocene. Ice Cube's here on the 8th. Das Racist. Dr. Lonnie Smith will be a really cool show. Kind of a jazz Hammond B3 guy who's a blast to watch play. I saw him. He was here last year for the festival, too. He's on April 14th at Mississippi Studios. So, it's spread out all over town. They booked a really good lineup this year.
And in other news, apparently Lauryn Hill is still alive. So, who knew?
And the great thing is that she's booked here for Saturday night, but given some recent shows, it might not be until Sunday morning that she shows up.
Well, there was this whole thing where she'd vanished, and then somebody said that she'd hooked up with some sort of like guru or some religious leader, and that, you know, had that she was considering, you know, it was that thing of, you know, losing her way in the material world and was considering renouncing, you know, her music, her music career, and just, I don't know, just like sitting on a beach somewhere and, you know, staring at a pile of small white stones trying to divine the meaning of life or whatever. And so, but there was a lot of discussion about whether she was ever going to sort of come back to the world of music. So apparently, does she have a new record out, or is she just touring? Do you know?
I think she's just touring. I haven't seen anything about a record. I know she's played a few shows, and she, you know, coming on two and a half hours. She's doing the Axl Rose thing after she's supposed to be there. So we'll see how this goes. I'm not going to that one. She's playing Coachella, too, so I figure I will see her. I will catch her down there.
Excellent. You can read him in print on the Oregon or online at oregonlive.com/music. Mr. Ryan White, I know you got a busy day. We will let you get back to it. As always, a pleasure. We will talk to you next week, my friend.
Yep. Thanks, y'all.
There you go. Ryan White. Awesome. All right. Joe Lewis and Honey Bears. I'm totally looking that up.
They're wonderful.
Yeah, I got nothing. I just saying the name out loud makes me feel incredibly Caucasian. Let's see. Listener Jenny wants us to know. I've already scored my Eddie Vedder ticket, she says. Let's see. The Eddie Vedder Uke Tour tickets for Portland and two shows in Seattle sold out in 10 minutes. She says, to be fair, it's not an all ukulele concert. He just wrapped up a bunch of dates in Australia. There were plenty of guitar songs. It's an Ed solo tour. Not just ukulele. That's apparently just an important component of it, though.
Okay.
Somebody says Lauryn Hill also married a Marley.
One of the many Marleys.
And has a ton of kids now. Apparently, they're buying in bulk. It's like going to that barbecue place in New York where they just wait, you know, by the pound. So they charge
you
for it.
Also inexpensive at Bi-Mart,
I guess. See, all right, hold on. Let me check that up. Ryan White. Awesome. Well, we should do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We got lots to talk about. We have the Penis Watch coming up and so forth, plus more news of the world and things
and
with
stuff.
Don Taylor. I got to get these photographs posted of this great, terrible place that I went to on Saturday. So stay there. We will continue on the other side. Plus, when the Rick Emerson Show returns, the best new television program that I have seen forever. So we'll talk about that on the other side as well. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio show. Back after this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Next in class, drink one of his booze and breathe. Make it pay. Don't lose your head. End up dead. You'll
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up here just a few, we'll talk penis. We got the penis watch coming up. We'll talk about TV last night as well. And I just got so much stuff. It's one of those days where it's just the tyranny. It's the overwhelming, just intimidating variety of things.
We have an hour, though.
The massive swath of things in front of us here.
Plenty of time. If we stay focused, if we keep our eye on the prize. I have the tiger, Rick Emerson.
Don't forget, we're also going to be on funemploymentradio.com this afternoon. That'll be posted around 6 p.m. Pacific time. 6 p.m. Pacific time. Today we'll be on Fun Employment Radio with Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon. Here's the thing that'll help me become more focused. So just now, when I was going to use the bathroom, I wasn't really able to do that because you, Don Taylor, were one step ahead of me,
oh.
Which really takes some doing, but you were one step ahead of me.
Uh-huh.
You managed to beat me to the bathroom. So what we're going to do now is this. Why don't I hand this to you?
Okay.
This being some copy points for our good friends, Squires Electric. I need to tell the people about Squires Electric and what a fine gaggle of men and women they are, while I, Rick Emerson, go use the restroom. And we'll all pretend it's not awkward at all.
Well, this fine program is brought to you by the people at Squires Electric. You can reach them at 503-252-1609 or online at squireselectric.com. For all of your wire or wiring needs, Joe Squires is a native of the Northwest. He understands the importance of electricity and the very special kind of electricity that we have only here in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, second. No, you know what? I've realized that this music bed's gonna end.
Okay,
it's gonna run out. Hold on, I gotta find a music bed here. Let me just find it. Let me find a music
nice
bed.
Long of one?
The, Do I ever? Yeah. Hey.
Woo.
Rick Emerson.
Yeah.
All right, hold on a second. Let's see if I can find something that is. Find something that's of sufficient length. All right, hold on.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before.
Let's see. You don't really ever think about these things. Let's see here if I can just. Wait, hold on. What about. Hold on. Oh, you know we'll
this
use.
This is good radio.
No. We'll use this. Hold on a second. We'll just use the standby bed here that we kind of have. We, all right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ah, there we go.
All right, back.
Squires Electric. That's right.
Yeah, right.
When your mama comes home and she's saying, "I ain't got me no electricity," you know who to call. That's right. Joe Squires at Squires Electric. Just talking about Joe Squires. Or Donna. Sexy, sexy Donna, who will answer the phone and get you a free estimate. Because they are a full-service electrical contractor for all your residential and commercial needs. Squires Electric takes pride in their professional and efficient service. You know what I'm talking about. You can call Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or go on the internet and visit squireselectric.com. Residential, commercial, anything that's got wires or wire. That's right. They will touch your hot wires and make sure you don't get shocked by them.
Shut your mouth! I'm talking about Squires.
Squires Electric.
All right, fantastic.
Thank you.
Sure, that went splendidly. Splendidly, my absence.
All right, hold on. Sure. Let's close that now. Done. Finished. Fantastic. All right, hold on. Second.
There we go. All right. Why, hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's Monday, April 4th, 2011. Still to come and get your penis watch next hour. Well, you know, it's all relative. Next hour here, we'll be talking to Sarah Stellan and Greg Nibbler on FunEmploymentRadio.com. Mm-hmm. That'll be posted and available for download and your listening pleasure at 6 p.m. Pacific time today. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You got your, was this a Craigslist ad or is this?
Yes.
Is this
yes.
The, you said you sent this to me? Because I don't think I saw it.
I may not have. I know I sent it to somebody. I did link to it on Facebook, but yeah, no, it's just a whole bunch of awesome.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you Dawn Taylor reading some crap she saw on the internet over the weekend.
Right. Subject line, $180, radical, vegan / freegan collective.
What is a freegan?
Oh, you'll find out.
Okay.
Also, everything I'm about to read you is in lowercase.
Okay.
Hey there. We're a collective house made up of two female-identified and three male-identified humans, with a Y, two dogs, and six cats. We are looking for a roommate to move in May 1st. For a good gender balance, we are ideally looking for someone who has been socialized female. However, we are open to the right person regardless of gender identity. We're into open and honest communication, dumpstering, crafts, music, raw/living foods, biking, natural building, permaculture, living in shacks and trailers, and all kinds of fun stuff like that. We are a vegan house, except that some of us dumpster dairy, but we have no eggs or meat in the house. We are all over 24, and most of us aren't even in our 20s anymore. We are more than queer/trans friendly. Ideally, we would like someone who has some experience both living away from their family of origin and also has some collective or group living situations. We like to party occasionally, but not in the house. Some of us don't even drink. Our dog friend, Octavia, is a German Shepherd cross, so she tends to be a bit protective and barky towards strangers. She is very nice, but it takes a moment of greeting her whenever you come in the house, and each of us take on the responsibility ourselves of introducing her to our visitors, which takes a couple of minutes the first few times. So unfortunately, we'd rather not have any more animal friends here. We are expecting another medium-sized dog to be living with us soon, as one of us are looking at rescues. Some of our food is communal, and we each have chosen chores. Although our house isn't super clean, it is usually pretty tidy, which is important to us, especially dishes, but it is a fixer-upper. Your room would be a 20-foot-long travel trailer in our yard. There is a radiator-style electric heater, and it is painted funky colors.
I have to ask, you may have already said this, was this Craigslist, or was this...
This is Craigslist.
This was Craigslist. Okay.
That would be just your room, as the rest of the common space is yours that is communal. We have a double lot, so there's lots of room for gardening. Bills are around $60 per month, including DSL. We ask for a refundable $100 deposit. We are looking for not just another roommate, but someone who is a really good fit for our home. Someone who has a good radical analysis of the world and works hard on being egalitarian and anti-oppressive in their everyday life, including their communication. Ideally, we would like someone who's vegan or vegetarian at the very least. We don't want to be authoritarian to roomies about their personal choices, but we like our no eggs, meat policy to be an attracting factor rather than a rule that roomies are okay with respecting. So email us with a bunch of info about yourself if you think you might be a good fit for our lovely abode, this derelict house. We also definitely will need to have an in-person interview before we can decide anything.
God almighty. And was that just listed in the regular, like, you know...
Yeah, rooms.
Rooms available. Yes. Rooms to...
Yes.
Can I just see that for a second?
Sure. Oops, there you go.
God damn. I mean... And by the way, how do you misspell shack? I mean, that almost... It almost takes effort to create something that's this off-putting.
Yeah.
So this is a...
So basically they're looking for someone... There are a bunch of people over 30 who live in shacks and trailers and dumpster dive and are looking for someone who will share their values.
This was my question was it just a single shack that they live in, or was it a series of shacks? Is it like a group of shacks clustered together?
Saying that your room will be a trailer in the back makes me wonder if there aren't like five or six trailers in their backyard.
Let's see. Your room would be a 21-foot-long travel trailer in our yard. So I wonder if this is a thing where they... It says one of us owns the house, though. We are wanting someone to commit to at least 6 months living here, as well as hopefully wanting to be living in Portland for a year more, but there's no lease to sign, because, you know, property is theft. One of us owns the house, so we're here for the long term. We would, however, rather not live with a couple. Well, that's bizarre, because there's only like seven of them living there as it stands now, and it seems like half men, half women, or women. Or whatever. Can I just tell you this? And this really is... I guess maybe in Portland, this is something that I should have seen before then. I've never seen the human thing spelled with a Y.
I don't think I ever have either.
I see the women thing spelled that way all the time, but I've never seen the human spelled that way. So we are two female-identified, three male-identified humans, ideally looking for someone who's been socialized female. Now, is that the same thing as being identified as female?
I guess, no, it means I guess you were raised as female.
Is there a phone number? I almost want to call them. There isn't.
Yeah, no.
It's Rosa Parks Way at MLK. Wasn't that the same thing? No, Rosa Parks Way is that's interstate, or the old interstate. Okay. So, we are ideally looking for someone who's been socialized female, but we are open to the right person regardless of gender identity. We are into open and honest communication, into dumpstering. How is one into dumpstering?
Well,
seems like that's a thing you either do or you don't. It doesn't seem like that's a hobby. That's a sort of a thing that you do because, you know...
You need stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because the old box spring has got one stain too many.
Well, I think when you start using terms like into dumpstering and freegan, then it's kind of like, we don't believe in buying new things, man, because people just throw away everything we could need. So if we could just, like live out of the dumpsters, we're being kind to Mother Gaia.
Is that what freegan means?
Pretty much, yeah.
Is that you're just you don't want to buy?
Right.
You don't want to buy crap?
Yeah.
We are into biking, natural building, permaculture.
I don't know what that means.
Is permaculture like the... Well, I don't know either.
Yeah, I have no idea what that word means.
We're into dumpstering. And then you're right when you say this. It's like all lowercase, and then it's all just like one long run-on sentence. We are into dumpstering, living in shacks and trailers, and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So the being into living in shacks and trailers indicates that is part of the vibe at the place.
I bet they all smell really terrible.
Ideally, we would like someone who has some experience both living away from their family of origin and who has some collective or group living situations. We like to party occasionally, not in the house. Partying means that's the drugs, right?
I guess. Drugs and drinking and such, yeah.
So it says, but not in the house. Some of us don't even drink. And then there's the whole thing about introducing you to their apparently
their
vicious guard dogs.
Their vicious dog friend.
God damn. Your room. How can a room? Okay. Your room would be a 21-foot-long travel trailer in our yard. What is a travel trailer? Is that?
I think that's the kind that gets
like
pulled,
you tow behind.
Yeah, that you tow behind a car.
Is that to differentiate it from like a mobile home?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, there is a radiator-style electric heater.
Yeah, I'm sure that's safe.
Something is either a heater... Something is either an electric heater or it's a radiator. It doesn't seem like that's...
No.
It seems like that's an either-or proposition.
Either way, it sounds like it's just a fire hazard.
This would be
You're living in a trailer in someone's backyard with a small electric space heater to keep you warm.
This would be just your room as the rest of the common space is yours as it is communal.
Right, so you don't have to share the 21-foot trailer. That would be just your room.
All right, okay.
But everything else, the rest of the common space, you know, is for everyone.
We are looking for someone who's vegan or vegetarian at the very least. We don't want to be authoritarian to roomies about their personal choices, but we like our no eggs meat policy being an attractive factor rather than a rule. So email us with a bunch of info about yourself. If you think you might be a good fit for our derelict house. And then they say we would inevitably have an in-person interview before we can decide anything. I feel strongly that we should send someone to meet with them.
Who would we send?
I don't know. I mean, who do we know that could...
We asked Laura.
Maybe.
She speaks hippie.
She probably could. The thing is, she can sort of hippie up, too. She owns the appropriate clothing. I mean, she can sort of pass herself off as one of them. I wonder if she'd be. I wonder if she'd be able to do this. I wonder if we could. I wonder if it's illegal to wire somebody up for just like a, you know, for just like an in-person meeting.
Probably.
Like if we just hooked her up with some sort of a microphone.
It is, yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not like you're recording.
I think it's an invasion of privacy. Yes, I believe that if.
Well, if I mean, maybe societally speaking.
Someone
look, those are just
their...
the man's rules, Dawn. Don't be constrained by what society has taught you about right and wrong. I mean, if you it's illegal to record a phone call in certain situations.
Yeah. They're into dumpstering and bike riding. I'm into recording people's conversations.
I think if you're just having a private conversation with somebody, meaning just a one-on-one conversation, mm-hmm. and it's not it's not like a business conversation, I don't think it's. Like, if I'm just sitting at a bus stop talking to a guy and I say, nice weather we're having, and he says, yeah, and I tape him saying that, I don't think I've broken the law.
Probably not, but then when you play it on your radio show.
Well, that's true. I guess if I'm playing it for commercial gain, yeah. which would be, like, triply offensive. Although I think we can just sort of assume that none of them probably would be hearing this because, capitalism is,
They do have DSL, though.
It's a cancer.
So apparently and somebody had to post this on Craigslist, so they know how to use the internet.
This is really what we could bring Timmy Ryan back for. And that's see, this is a thing that probably you don't properly appreciate. But Timmy Ryan, this is exactly the sort of mission for which he's created. We could probably find somebody to do this, though. So this is in and it's in Northeast somewhere.
Yeah.
God damn. And you know the thing about it is they're probably swamped with responses. I mean, Portland being Portland, right? Wouldn't you imagine there's a fair number of people who are sort of getting back to them about this? Jesus, God almighty.
I don't think it might be interesting to just, I don't know if they'd be interested in just talking to us, like call them up, email them and ask them if they talk to us and tell us how many responses they got and just actually talk to one of them.
I would really like to, I mean, I am legitimately curious because I would like to know the thing about the male identified versus, and female identified versus been socialized female.
Well, I think that's a way, I mean, if they...
What is the difference between being identified and being socialized?
Well, socialized is how you grew up. So I think basically identified is, obviously that's your personal identification. I think it's their way of saying they would prefer a female.
They want someone with a vagina.
Right. They want somebody who actually has
that.
A vagina, but they don't want to say that.
Okay. So all right. I wondered if this was like hippie code for something.
Because, male identified means that you could be, actually female, but you're identifying as male and vice versa.
Is this like...
Because and they'll say we are more than trans friendly.
Is this
at least we believe they have trans? At least one of the people living there
is this some hippie sex house? Is that really what this is? Are they? Did they have someone leave the flock and so they're trying to?
I don't know. There are so many qualifiers on their identification there.
I wonder maybe└└└└============└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└============└└============└└============└październ└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└============└└============└└============└└└============└============└============└└└============└└==================================================================================================================================== gentlemen. We are more than queer trans friendly. Ideally, we would like someone who's blah, 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 blah. Okay. All right. We are vegan. I didn't even hear this part when you first said it. We are a vegan house, except that some of us dumpster dairy.
Yeah.
Dairy isn't a verb.
So they don't buy dairy, but they will bring it home if it's free in the dumpster.
Because that's exactly the kind of food that you want to get out of a trash can. Of all of the things that you could possibly fish out of some refuse pile behind a restaurant, what you definitely want to go for is the eggs. Whatever you do, make sure that you go for the milk first. Jesus, God almighty. All right. We'd rather not have any animal friends here. I notice they avoid the term pet because that implies some sort of master-slave relationship.
Right.
They don't want to. We are expecting another medium-sized dog to be living with as soon as one of us are looking at rescues. This must be the worst place to live on Earth.
Yeah, because two dogs and six cats and five people and looking for another one, there aren't enough things living in this place. The bathroom probably has just this constant layer of scum on everything and just smells like Dr. Bronner's peppermint soap. And no one there wears deodorant.
No, of course not. No, that's a societal construct, Don. Don't let societal expectations tell you how your body should and should not smell or how many cavities you should have inside your mouth.
There's always some giant pot of something on the stove that smells vile and is based on brown rice. Would you like to eat some lentils? They'll offer you when you come over to visit. No, I would not.
You just know there's a bunch of grubby-faced children with long dreadlocks like running around all the time too. Just like a bunch of three-year-old boys with hair to their ass, just sort of littering the floor. All right. Well, I wonder if we could just send somebody by just to sort of scope the place out, if nothing else. I mean, is it – now, did you say – did they include a phone number here, or was it just
it's Craigslist, so they want you to email the Craigslist link.
Well, we should
on the ad.
Well, do you want to respond and say that we've got that we have questions?
Yeah, I can do that.
You should. I'll just give that back.
Okay.
To you. Jesus, God Almighty.
Just, I can speak. I can speak politically correct, hippie. To
yeah, I don't really know that. I can say that.
I can add all kinds of qualifiers about us respecting, their space and their privacy and, everything.
By the way, somebody says, I'm sure it will come as a surprise to these stupid hippies to hear that this type of renting is highly illegal, but then they spelled illegal with a Y. Well done, sir. and apparently Portlandia did a sketch about dumpster diving people at one point. I mean, the idea that we live in a city where dumpstering is a verb is just embarrassing. Yeah. Some of us dumpster dairy. Right. God damn. It's just awful. all right.
Oh, Portland.
All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A little after midnight, police in St. Augustine, Florida, discovered thousands of bristle worms swimming in Volano Beach.
Bristle worms? Don't ever say that. I don't even know what they are. I don't want to know. I don't want
to
see a picture.
Are you sure you don't
want to? I kind of want to know. I don't want to see a picture. A bristle worm.
Look them up. Google bristle worms because they're really interesting.
Okay. Interesting has a lot of meanings. Interesting could mean any number of things. I will wait.
Yes. Corporal Brandon Embry of St. Augustine Police was one of the first to see them and said he couldn't believe his eyes. He said, there had to be millions of them. I couldn't see the bottom. I assume he means the water because they were swimming in the water at the beach. All I could see was red. Embry also said they started to disappear because mullet were attacking them. Dr. Quentin White, a professor of marine biology at Jacksonville University, saw the video from Milano Beach and said it was a classic bristle worm mating frenzy. He said it happens every year when salt water warms up. Bristle worms range in size from about 1 inch long up to 20 inches in length.
Yeah.
Most small ones are an orange color, but occasionally appear two-tone. Larger bristle worms are frequently gray or brownish in color. Bristle worms are composed of many segments and have bristles, which extend from both sides of the body along its entire length, hence their common name. Bristle worms live in the sand or within live rock. They are nocturnal and not usually seen during the day. Historically, bristle worms were all considered to be bad. Most literature warns they can attack and eat clams, anemones, corals, and even fish.
This sounds like a thing I want to stay away from at all costs.
But yeah, apparently thousands of them swarmed this beach in Florida.
Now, every now and again, there'll be some sort of an infestation, by some kind of creature on some kind of beach where it happens once a year or something, and it's like the red bloom rolls in or the grunion run or whatever. But a worm infestation doesn't sound like anything that I want any part of.
No, especially when some of them get to be a foot and a half long.
No,
and they have bristles.
No, I'll pass on that. Thank you very much.
No.
By the way, somebody said two comments about the ad. Somebody said, do you consider this as a joke? And somebody wants to see what kind of people would reply to this. No, there's no way. I mean, that's the thing.
It was posted on April 1st, but honestly, it's not jokey enough a joke.
It's not. The humor is way too subtle to register as a joke if that's what their intent was. There's no. I mean, and it's just too believable. That's the other thing. And I think that they use the lingo a little too well. I mean, I think somebody who would write that as a joke probably wouldn't have. They would not have that degree of acumen in terms of speaking the hippie language. Somebody says, "Ask Nibbler. He looks grubby. He really does." Greg could totally pass himself off.
He could.
Except they're looking for somebody who's socialized female, though. So it's got to be, it would have to. It would have to be. It'd have to be a woman. So, and you probably couldn't. You could do it over the phone. In person, you can't. I don't think you could really pull off the hippie thing in person. So and I don't know that my wife could either. She didn't look stringy enough. I mean, you got to That's a thing where you got to go several days, I think, without getting a good grooming.
I don't know, though. I could pull my hair back in a ponytail and not wear any makeup and put on my Doc Martens and kind of do a butch thing.
Somebody says, ask them what happens if Charlie says you have to sleep with Tex and Sadie. This totally does sound – it does sound like some creepy sort of weird Mantony sort of comedy. The thing that is intriguing to me is that they are clearly looking for another physical woman, which makes me wonder if – if the lengthy interview process is to determine if you'd be willing to get your sex on with them because there's some sort of grubby, greasy, like, hump fest happening, some sort of a Gaia bonding, sex ritual that you'll be expected to take part in.
And maybe that's really all it is. Maybe they just feel like they need more feminine energy.
Maybe. It's possible. Yeah. All right.
So our penis watch.
All right. Here's your penis watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
My enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Here it is, Don Taylor with your penis watch.
I've been waiting to read this since last week.
Awesome.
Andrew Lloyd Webber has spoken with courageous candor about his battle with prostate cancer and revealed that it left him impotent. The Phantom of the Opera composer, 63, had surgery to remove his prostate after revealing he was in the early stages of the disease in October 2009. But in an interview with Piers Morgan on the ITV series Life Stories, the three times married father of five says that he has fought another battle since the operation to regain his sex drive. I'm a ladies' man who can never make love. I'm resigned to that, he said.
Like a Greek punishment.
I regard it as great luck. I'm out the other side. The composer was said to have developed a post-operative infection following surgery to remove the gland and was taken to a hospital in London where he remained for a few days. But he was given the all-clear a short time later and continued to have regular checkups. Despite his improved health, his sex drive never returned, and he faced a battle with wife Madeline to overcome his impotence.
So it's not like a... Well, see, so when you sort of here's a little behind the scenes. So last week you had mentioned that you had this story about Andrew Lloyd Webber's penis, which is not a thing that, like, you anticipate hearing a lot. And you had mentioned it off the air when Anna Griffin was here on Thursday. And we said, well, out of deference to you, Anna, we're not going to read this story on the air. And she said, what story? And then we proceeded to relay it to her in great detail, like between segments or something. But I didn't – when you were describing his impotence, I thought it was like a physical – sort of like a physiological impotence, not an impotence of the of the desire. Not a lack of – I thought it was just that his junk didn't work anymore, not that he wasn't
– it's that as well. I mean, I think the thing is
– he's fighting a battle on every front.
Right. He says – because let's face it, he's 63. But I guess at 63 you can still, you know, have a sex drive. But he said that he and his wife have talked about his impotence at length. He revealed that they had decided not to use various sex toys and penis pumps because the devices were, quote, too gruesome to contemplate. A source on the show told the Daily Mirror that Lloyd Webber got emotional but refused to shy away from Piers Morgan's questions, said, revealing his sex drive was massively reduced, he admits prostate removal left him unable to make love. Andrew has been told it's unlikely he will ever have sex again. He actually has a bit of a giggle when he chats about the possible solutions and laughs off ideas that he would resort to Viagra, penis pumps, and other stimulants.
And they're too horrific to contemplate? That's what
too
he said
gruesome.
About them? Too gruesome to contemplate. Well, isn't there – so, I mean, if his whole thing is that – I mean, it just seems like there's two different things going on here. One is if the procedure left him without sexual desire, that's a thing I guess they can, you know, treat or mitigate chemically or with medication or whatever. If it's that his business just doesn't work, like, you know, there's just some wire has been cut somewhere. Isn't there a thing where they can just put in like a little like gooseneck lamp, like a kind of a dowel thing where you can just sort of like move it into the rudders up position?
Yeah, there are some odd things. I actually let's call it dating. I dated a fellow for a while who had to use one of those.
Now was it a pump or was it just a kind of like a metal thing that he just adjusted into place?
It was a weird little pump thing that had been installed in like his testicular region.
Yes.
And he had to actually squeeze it several times. It was kind of like...
Like one of those things where you're inflating an air mattress and camping and it was like you're stepping on the little bellows to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like it actually felt a little bit like the little plastic squeaky toys that are little squeakers that are inside dog toys, you know. And yeah, it was
one of those rings that squirts water.
And I guess I don't know if it filled it with blood,
like a saline,
or liquid, or saline, or air, or I don't know what it was, but it would cause.
And then, how did you release the or someone? How did you when everything was done? How was the air then?
I guess eventually it just its own.
Is there a slow leak built into there? Could you overinflate it? Did he have you inflate it?
Well, he asked me at one point if I wanted to, like, see what it felt like, and I said sure, and I squeezed it a couple of times, and I was kind of like, okay, don't like that.
But I mean,
I was like, you know, you go ahead and do that part.
I'm so fast. By the way, I should just say this. I came back from being in the restroom just a short while ago, and I just see this on the screen. It says, didn't you just apologize to Squires for the whole cupcake or cobbler thing or whatever? Now you've just done a whole porn commercial for them. I don't even know what was going on in my absence.
I wasn't doing porn. I was being like kind of doing a sexy, very Barry White kind of a voice.
Okay. All right. So you were with – when did the guy – at what point of the evening did he tell you, so baby, it's like this. I'm pneumatic.
I'm trying to remember when he actually told me. I think he had told me before we ever it was one of those awkward, weird kind of situations. I worked with him. He had contracted me to do a job for him.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. And I guess he wasn't getting any from the wife. And so it was kind of – we had the sort of situation where, you know, he was bemoaning the sadness of the death of his sex life.
And since you're already here –
and so, and one thing led to another.
We've already got the canola oil. Yeah. And so whatever.
Yeah.
And then he said, here's a little thing you got to know about me. I'm air powered
and
whatever.
Yeah, and he said he had this pump thing. And I was like, oh, okay.
All right.
You know, that's interesting. I've never seen one of those.
Had he had an ailment? You said there was some physical?
He had had, yeah. Right. There had been some kind of physical thing that had happened that had caused that.
So I wonder if that's a thing where it's like, if they tell you, like, no more than five pumps, six at the, like, if you just keep pumping, if that's like,
I guess,
you're going to get a blowout of some kind.
Yeah.
And if it's just built with some sort of a slow leak, so that it just sort of gradually,
I guess maybe I'm trying to think of. I guess maybe there was something.
If you squeeze one to inflate, and then you hold the other one down to let it out,
something like that, yeah.
Let's see. Somebody says my father had one of those installed. I guess you just pinch the Wonder Pump, and that would release it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Pinch the Wonder Pump.
Pinch the Wonder Pump.
So it's like the it's like an air mattress again, where it's like has the little bladder or whatever, and then you squeeze the valve or the diaphragm at the end, and it says, "Oh, the stories of the nurses all trying to show him how to use it. I'm still recovering from those conversations."
Yeah, some things you don't want to know about your dad.
There was actually an episode of St. Elsewhere many years ago where there was a patient who had an inflation device implanted in his member because he was not able to achieve or sustain on his own, and there was some sort of a zany plot where he had recruited the services of a call girl for the evening and decided he really wanted to wow her and gave it like five pumps too many, and there was Howie Mandel turns his back for a moment, you just hear sort of a bang sound, and let me just say this also. Which, and while we're all recovering from that image, I had a friend of mine who used. So here's, I don't know if women are really familiar with this, but have you seen? Do you know the existence of the so-called penis pump?
Yeah,
which is it's one of those like things that you put your money into the bank before you put it in the vacuum tube.
Yeah, supposedly they sell them because they're supposed to like actually make you larger. But I always assumed that people really bought them because it felt nice.
Oh, see, I didn't think that. That had actually never occurred to me. Like my understanding of it was, and this really just is my understanding. My understanding was that it draws more blood, and so it is a temporary embiggening. Device.
No, I always assumed it was just snake oil, that it didn't actually do what it said that it would do at all.
Well, I don't think it does, but I think that's why guys get it. In other words, yeah. I think it is a thing that is designed theoretically anyway. The purpose of it is to draw extra blood there and then to increase girth, etc. And so it does that by, you just like you just squeeze the handle and it goes, and it's just like it's like a vacuum. But I had a friend of mine so this is one of those secondhand stories, but he claimed it was his roommate.
A friend of yours.
It was, yes, my friend, but he claimed it
my
was
his friend Dick Bremerson.
Bremerson. He claimed it was his roommate, so it wasn't one of like those friends of a friend things. He was like, it was a guy I lived with. He's like, it happened to the guy I lived with while I was living with him. But he said that a friend of his was a porn enthusiast, spent a lot of time on adult products and devices and novelties and material and whatever, and said that the guy had bought one of these thinking like, well, hey, who knows? If I can add an extra, half inch, that's a, whatever, half inch more pleasure for the ladies. And the guy's like, well, whatever. But he said that basically, he warned the guy because it was, you know, it was just basically like a plastic, a large plastic test tube, basically.
Yeah, it's
you
basically
put your
you're
unit.
Just giving yourself a huge hickey.
Yeah.
All over.
And then it seals it, and then you use this handle, and it draws the air out and makes a vacuum. And he said that it didn't really work for what it was intended. This is so horrible. But he said that the guy, like, completely disregarded the directions about drawing for the microphone, even hearing this. And he said the guy just, like, gave it several pumps too many. And he used this phrase that I'd never really heard before, which is that it he said that the end result of using this incorrectly, by the way, was that his member then took a sharp, sharp turn to the left all the rest of the man's days because it, quote, everyone brace for impact now. It, quote, exploded the cells on one side of his member. And that was enough to, I mean, if I ever had any urge, any desire, any even inkling that I was going to go like, well, that's got to feel different. Let me give it a go.
No.
That was like an inoculation against that. I was completely, any desire to try that was like hermetically sealed and destroyed. Mm. So, yeah, no, do not want.
I've always been kind of baffled by the fact that men cherish and treasure, you know, their genitalia the way they do, and yet they're eager to, like, just stick it into weird, wacky things that could cause them, you know, potential problems.
Yeah, no, I don't even know.
I mean,
what
if
it is.
I had one, I would be very, very picky about what I put it into.
Well, I think it's really you're looking at a sort of like risk versus possible payoff ratio, and I think you know, it's not unlike running into a burning building, not so much to save a baby, but to save you know, the framed Picasso original that you think might be in the basement.
Mm. Okay,
it's really not like that. I don't know what it's like. It's a You know what it's like? It's like those guys who go to work on an Alaskan fishing boat. Because, look, the odds that you're going to die, you know, 1 in 5. But the odds that you're going to live, 4 in 5. And, you know, if you make it out the other side, there's like 80 grand. You know, so I think that's how guys view that. They're like, well, look, sure, this could explode the cells on half of my penis. But if it doesn't, hey, what a feeling. So, you know.
Yeah. It's sort of like there's this mystery hole. And
hole.
And say you stuck your hand in it, you might pull your hand out with a delicious slice of chocolate cake. Or it could be like poisonous spiders.
Yeah.
You know, and just you're thinking, well, it could be cake.
Well, you know, but
except it's not your hand, it's your penis.
But it's... But look at the number of times you hear from, you know, even now in 2011, when you'll just hear from guys who are like, well, you know, I don't really like to use those rubbers. You know, I find them big. Who were we talking about? We just talked about this the other day.
Yeah.
We were talking. I don't remember why it came up. We were talking about guys who just had some sort of you know, some aversion to as my friend John used to say, strapping up. Like, even, you know, even now. And it's like, what? There is no possible... There is no possible, as Tom Likas used to say, one of Likas's truest statements. If you're a guy, there is no 45 seconds on earth that is worth, like, let's say, I don't know, the $250,000 you're going to have to pay if for some kid, you know, you might not want, you know, to send it, you know, to college and erase it for 18 years, or to just be like, I don't know, to be joined at the kid to some woman that you might flat out loathe when everything is said and done, or to, you know, like, have your junk turn black and fall off.
And honestly, you know, who is the lady who is sleeping with some guy she doesn't know and not insisting?
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
There really isn't just men who, you know, who engage in a little, you know, like, what's on the other side of this opening, you know, sort of a mystery hole fun. I mean, that's an equal opportunity thing. But guys. Yeah. But
And you know, in my single days, I met the occasional, you know, fellow who did not want to.
Well, I can't feel anything.
You know.
It's like showering in a raincoat.
Like, it's like, well, okay, I can appreciate that feeling. But, you know, something, we haven't known each other that long. And I don't know where that's been.
Yeah.
So, yeah. These are your options.
Yeah.
You wear it and woohoo, fun. You don't wear it and you go home.
Yeah. And it's like guys who just bitch about that are just like, well, it just reduces the. Well, how much is the sensation going to be reduced when it's just you, like, spanking it to a Sears catalog at home tonight, like on the couch weeping to yourself? Like, you know, it's.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. But to be fair, you don't really ever see. It's not like there are a lot of cases of like women being taken to an ER with a shop vac, you know, or something up in there. So.
No, that's the other thing is that women, yeah, you don't hear a lot about women having something involving like, you know, well, I don't even want to go there because men insert things into themselves that they shouldn't too.
Yeah.
And again, you don't hear a lot about women just having to have something extracted from them that had no business in there in the first place.
Now, to be fair, though, I think this is to some degree, this is because there are, you know, I think there are more items made available to women for that because there is less shame associated with women using products like that as well. And I think men are sometimes there's a little bit of awkward. Well, because you were actually doing a little bit on Friday when you were saying that it was, you know, that it was it was sort of creepy or objectify-y or whatever for guys to get like a thing that just looks like the female area.
Well, and it can be. And to be fair, going to those stores can be awkward for every. I guess they can be awkward for men, too. It never seems to be quite as awkward for men. But I know that when I had that period when I for like about 8 months or whatever, when I had that job doing those home parties with the lingerie and the ladies stuff,
yes.
A lot of that, the reason that the home parties were popular is because these women were not comfortable going to stores to buy these things, or I guess buying them, you know, over the internet or whatever. So, but having, you know, being in your living room, like having a couple of beers with friends surrounding you, it's suddenly fun and giggly and cute to be looking at, you know, vibrators
well,
and stuff.
Well, there is also that thing, too, where it's the, you know, women talk with justification about the double standard that, you know, like guys who have sex a lot are, you know, awesome and women are, you know, like women are sluts and whatever. And that's certainly true. But the reverse is true as well, which is that sort of shades of like Fanny Flag that for women, I think the industry built around and the practice of self pleasure has been like sanctified as this female empowerment thing, where it's been given this like Fridan sheen of, you know, sisters doing it for themselves and it's great and it's wonderful, which is, you know, which I don't disagree with. Have at it. But for guys, though, you know, for guys, there's this stigma that you're just like a loser. Especially, God forbid, if you go to a guy's house and the guy does have like his, you know, as Sam Kinison used to say, his Ronco pocket pal. You know, that's a guy that gets a lot of ribbon for that. Whereas for women, it's like women, you know, for women, there's almost like they're clutching it as like this totem of their femininity.
Also, you can just go to Walgreens and buy the thing that's like a neck massager and it doesn't look anything like,
yeah,
you know, a phallus. And those are awesome. And nobody bats an eye when you buy those because, hey, it's a neck massager.
But, you know, but here's the thing. Nobody bats an eye except the guy who's checking you out at the register. He arches an eyebrow because he knows.
Yeah. I remember, though, being deeply, deeply feeling really awkward and self-conscious and uncomfortable when I was at a store in San Francisco the first time I bought anything even remotely kind of, you know, out there. And it was I can't remember the name of the store, but it was one of the big mainstream, like women doing stuff.
Toys and Babeland.
Yeah,
or something.
But the thing is, it's like they had samples of everything out in the camp, but you had to actually go and ask for the thing from the woman at the counter. And so that was, I think I would have been less awkward if I was just picking up a box and putting it down and paying for it.
Right.
But I had to go up to the counter and say, I'd like to buy the leather padded, you know, handcuff thing. You know, I had to actually ask her to go back and get them.
It's like in the early days of video stores when that you couldn't just pick the movie up off the shelf and go like check it out. You had to go. Like, there was a list at the counter of the movies they had in stock, and you'd go, okay, I'll take Terminator and Police Academy and The Pink Lagoon. And, you know, and the guy had to go back and get them off the shelf and bring them up to you.
And I was so proud of myself for actually going through with it and doing it and stuff, but it was kind of like, it was like, and now it's, I think at this point, I just don't care anymore about any of that stuff. I just wouldn't give a damn. But I remember just like having a knot in my stomach and having to go through the thing in my head of going, they work here.
Right.
People ask them for stuff all day.
Oh, and just look at some of the stuff that they sell.
They don't care what you're buying.
Seriously. And it's like they're just so numb to it. And look at the stuff that those stores, I mean, really, they just sell like the full on like, you know, like weird, like gas mask, you know, flogging ensembles. And you're just like, who wears this?
But I was just like, hi, I want to buy this thing.
No, guys are that way with rubbers too, where they just get all like weird and nervous about it. But then again, guys reach some event horizon where they're like, I would like some condoms, please. You know, I'm going to be having sex. Which is, here's the thing to think about. Like guys in rubber factories, it must be weird to be like, you know, one of the guys on the assembly line or whatever, and you're like the thing of like they take every 10th one and they like stretch it over a replica of the member to see if it works. It must be strange to be working with a product that you know is just like going to end up inside somebody. That's an odd thing.
Yeah,
that's just weird. You know, that's just a strange. You know,
well, the weirdest thing for me ever was, and we've talked about this before, was that one documentary I saw, or it was like one of those HBO Real Sex or something like that, and it was a porn actress, and it followed the entire process of her getting the mold made of her nether regions.
Yeah.
To like her visiting the factory where they made it, and there's like all of these like rows and rows of Filipino women just sitting in a factory threading little bits of fake hair into fake vaginas. And I thought, well, that's a terrible way to earn a living.
Seriously.
You know, to earn your 20 cents a day or whatever they're getting paid.
Just, I mean, it's like if you live in just like, you know, you're just living in the, you know, in some tiny village in China and you just hate your life anyway. And then your whole job is just going and stitching a replica of a white woman's vagina together. And
yeah.
Like, well, my life can't get much worse than this. You
yeah.
know, realizing the next.
Well, it's the best job available in town, working at the vagina factory.
The next turn of the karmic wheel has to be better. That's the only thing you tell yourself when you're working there. All right. You know, final thought about this. Somebody just typed, again with the porn, again with the penis, again with the vagina.
Rick and I have certain things that we're just endlessly fascinated
look, everybody by. Has certain specialties, certain arrows in the quiver, one might say. You know, the weird thing is, it's like if you go to the I think fantasy is this way, and there's what's the Spartacus, the one on the Burnside. So I remember going there, and it's not like I haven't been to those stores before, but I remember going there and having to, like, they were doing, was it Spartacus or was it Taboo? And they were doing, like, a giveaway or something. They were doing, and maybe it was Taboo, because they were doing, like, some sort of a giveaway, some sort of a, we had some sort of a display box there. You know, it was like you dropped in a thing. It was like we were giving away VIP tickets to, like, a Likas thing or whatever. So I remember being there with a saleswoman and, like, having to, you know, it's like the saleswoman and I talking to the manager about, like, the contest or the giveaway. While, like, 2 feet away, though, like, one of the clerks is explaining, like, how the, like, it was kind of like the penis pump thing, how these, like, pneumatic nipple pump things worked, like, to this woman and, like, a guy that was, and the guy was having some questions about, hold on a second, now, I mean, what kind of pressure can I exert on those and have those stay attached once the pumping has been done? And it was like the sales girl and I are having to pretend we're not hearing this conversation and not imagining like this biker guy and his old lady going home and getting their pump on with this thing. It was all very weird. I think that was the same place where it's like they had this weird like lube station because it was like this carrot, like this lazy Susan of all of these like bottles of lubricant.
Jim says that they have that at Fantasy where he works.
It was
as
like
well.
The Bath and Body Works thing where it's like you can try like, you know, what is this? Well, it's coconut lime verbena hand cream or something. But it was just all of these, you know, it was just like endless bottles of lubricative items that you could, I guess, just put on your and rub around in your hands or whatever to see how they worked.
Yeah.
Which is just sort of.
Well, I mean, at It's My Pleasure, they have like there's a shelf that they have all. They have one of each of them. And that way you can like look at them and see, check the viscosity or whatever
yeah.
and see if you like it.
Do you ever see the things that are just flat out scary though? Like there is like the whole weird like all like the sensory deprivation suit or whatever
yes.
where there's like the full on like mask with the hose and the tube and the, you know, that freaks me out.
Yeah, that's the thing is that there are things in those stores that make me realize that there are extremes of sexuality to which I will never ever be
yeah.
privy. You know, when you see like the giant fake penises that are like the size of like a fat man's arm.
Like the Hindenburg.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like that's not just for display purposes, is it?
No.
There are people who use that.
Well, it's like the thing at the Emerson, the last listener party, the Emerson roast or whatever that Carl Click presented me with, which is just a huge rubber fist.
Oh yeah,
and that's from Taboo, of course, because they stock them.
Yeah,
in any number of, you know, with knuckle hair or without, and you realize that must be, you know, that's a specific.
Yeah, there are things that I find fascinating that I don't find sexy, but I still
yeah.
find fascinating, like the rope suspension people
yeah,
and stuff
no,
like that, which it's like. I'm just completely fascinated by that without finding it arousing in any way whatsoever. Well, but I still just am like, wow,
yeah.
wow.
Well, it's like the electro kits or whatever, where it's like you're just putting like, you know, like you're just sticking like electrodes on your flesh
yeah.
or something. And
like I think yeah. I told you I was at some kind of like a weird kinky people doing thing party, and it was one of the oddest experiences because I went down to the basement where all the stuff was going on. And I personally was not actually turned on by anything I was watching, but in the sort of almost anthropological sense, I was just fascinated because there was like a St. Andrew's cross and somebody getting flogged. That was really fascinating. There was somebody who was getting their back pierced with all of these needles and then everything all laced up together. Ugh. And it was really fascinating. I mean, it was one of those things where I was just, but it was really weird for me to be sitting there thinking to myself, okay, why am I here again? Because I'm not actually turned on by any of this, but I think it's just that thing of I always want to go. I think part of the reason I became a journalist, I just want to go see stuff.
Well, that you wouldn't normally see.
Yeah, I just want to watch people do stuff that I wouldn't get to see otherwise.
Right. Well, that's it sounds like a weird comparison. That's why we watch those like dirty job shows.
Yeah.
Because like you wonder, well, what's it like to clean out a septic tank for a living? You know. So, the final thought about all this has nothing to do with really anything we were talking about, except to say that the sensory deprivation. Porn suit or whatever made me think of this. Did you know this? Did you know that there's a sensory deprivation clinic that's opened on Hawthorne?
No.
I asked Siegfried about it because I was talking about I was talking about going to New York, and he asked if I was going on vacation, and I said, no, I'm just going to talk to some people at the book or whatever. And I said, you know, if I was going to go to vacation, I told him that basically in exchange for Lara not going to New York because she realized that she wouldn't have a good time because I'm a real jerk when I'm doing work stuff, that in exchange for her not going to New York, I agreed to go on vacation with her later this year. At some point before the end of calendar year 2011, I agreed to go on vacation with her. And I further stipulated that I would go on vacation somewhere where my phone didn't work and where my computer didn't work, where I could not get email or phone calls. Because the thing about me is, like, if I have the ability to work, I will. Like, if I can check my email or make phone calls, I'll do it. I can't. Not like this Saturday where she left notes all over the house, like chastising me, saying like, don't turn on your computer. Like, I was able to do that for the better part of the day. But even that was only until she left to go dancing with her girlfriends. And then I was like, you know, on the computer or whatever and like checking my BlackBerry, my iPhone, or whatever. So but if like I have the ability to do that, I will. I can't not work if I'm able to. So I said, you know, the deal is we have to go somewhere where I can't even do that. So like later on this year sometime, we're going to go to, I don't know, like the Mexico or just someplace where I can't, you know, where just none of my stuff works. So I can just sort of remove the temptation to work. So I'm effectively isolated. And so that then brought up the conversation with Siegfried. Siegfried said, well, you know, you ought to just go to like an island or someplace. And I said, well, you know, we've talked about that because she went to this place called the San Blas Islands, which is literally, I mean, it is very similar to like the cartoon of like the marooned guy on an island with a single palm tree. I mean, it's basically that. There's just these tiny islands that you can walk, I think, in like 2 minutes from end to end. And they're just these minuscule patch of islands in the middle of the Caribbean. But I don't really want to do that. But he mentioned that there was a place on Hawthorne that now does sensory deprivation stuff. And I said, like Altered States? And he said, it's exactly like Altered States in terms of the setup. It is like a sensory deprivation tank where you put on like a blindfold or whatever, and then you put in I guess like earplugs or earphones that have like white noise or something, and then you float inside this like water tank in the dark hearing white noise, and it's a total and the whole thing is that they cut off all of your senses and you don't feel anything at all. It is an absolute like cutting off of all of your sensory input, which sounds awesome.
We need to A, get the person who owns this thing in here to talk to us about it, and then B,
try it. Yes. So this will be like that time that I agreed to go do colon cleansing with Sarah, you know, is like taking one for the team. But this is going to be like a sort of a thing that I actually want to do, because apparently, and I'm not like, you know, like a hippie trippy sort of, you know, like opening my doors at perception guy. But he said that, and this makes sense. He said that basically the theory is that if you cut off all of the sensory input to your mind, that your mind can't just do nothing. And so that if it doesn't have anything external to grab onto. And it sounds so gay to say, like, it looks inward, but you know what I mean. Your brain basically just – it's like your computer just, like, starts to defrag itself after a while. Well, I don't have anything else to do. I guess I'll just clean up the CPU or whatever. So that's what it does. Your brain just sort of self-focuses, and apparently people find it very – but it just sounds awesome.
It does.
Because I have told Lara over and over and over again, I've said that, you know, my dream vacation is to go to a Motel 6 where no one knows I'm going to be. And like where no one can call me or find me because no one knows I'm there. And then I just go to the Motel 6, I lock the door, I draw the blinds, and I don't leave for like a month. And that's it. And I don't do anything. I'm just there where no one can find me.
Do you find that some of the best sleep you ever get is when you're just like in a motel or a hotel room?
Yes.
Because it's like you can turn on the air conditioner and get the white noise thing. No one knows where you are. And it's like you can just kind of go.
Yeah, no, the first
just complete privacy.
As much of a hellhole as that hotel in Manhattan was that I stayed in, the first night that I was there was some of the best sleep I've had in months because I got in, I checked in, but, you know, there's no phone in the room. Lara was actually, I think she was at work or she was gone, and I checked in with her and I said, like, I'm going to be traveling for a while. So, like, you know, and I'm going to get to the hotel and crash. And she's like, OK, well, just call me whenever you're ready. But I had my phone just turned off because it was in airplane mode and I just left it off. So I'm in this hotel. My phone is turned off. There is no phone in the room. I'm in New York City. No one knows no one in Portland knows where I am. No one has the name of the hotel except for my wife, and she's not calling me. And of course, you're in New York where no one cares who you are because that's a city where you just instantly vanish. And that was, that night, even as horrible as that place was, I just slept like a friggin' rock. I slept like a baby. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I've always loved that for some reason. One of the things I loved most just driving down to visit friends in San Francisco or L.A. is always that stop on the way home where I stop at like a motel in Bend or
totally.
Something and spend the night. And it's like, yeah, that whole thing of just checking in. And then you get into the room, and as soon as you get in the room, you're just kind of like, I am completely alone and no one knows where I am. And I have no responsibilities or pressures on me, and this is awesome.
No, I have totally.
And I can just order a pizza and watch TV and then sleep the sleep of the dead.
Well, it's like the house-sitting thing is like that, too, if you ever house-sit for somebody, and especially if nobody else really knows you're doing it. And like I have creature comforts. I'm here. I'm not like living under an underpass somewhere. You know, I'm not living in a cardboard box, but it is as though I have just dropped off the grid, like altogether. I mean, that really
is
just
wrong with us.
No,
that we love that so much.
That is my absolute dream. I mean, that is just like the best of all. That is the best of all possible worlds. When you're doing that. So no. I totally identify with you on that. So I'm going to look into this sensory deprivation place and see if it's on the up and up. And if it is, and it seems like it would be, because that's seems like a reputable business. It's not like in some guy's basement or something. So that is the thing we should totally investigate.
Okay.
God, it's 3:30 already.
Yes, it is.
We've just been wasting our lives here talking about dildos.
Not wasting, really.
That's what my whole obituary is going to read. Just wasted his life talking about dildos and Star Wars. And apologizing to Cheryl for talking about dildos and Star Wars.
And Cheryl's just at home listening to this, shaking her head going, again.
Sometimes again. I just don't even like to, I don't even like to look at the text box sometimes because I just know what's waiting there. Like the Skype thing from her, just like, where it's like in all caps going, come on! all right. And then I just opened the Skype chat. This just says, white woman's vagina. And there's no follow-up statement at all. All right.
Well, you did use that phrase earlier when talking about the factory the people.
Done. Let's see. We want to thank our guests, including Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian. Join us tomorrow when our guests will just be us and our sparkling wit. I didn't get a chance to talk about, real quickly before we end, tomorrow I'll have the photo essay up from this horrible, awful place that Ron and I went to. Before we run too late, we got to end here in a second, but I can't even believe I meant to do this at the top of the show and then I got so distracted. It's just one of those days where it's like I got not like I'm out of it or tired or whatever. It's almost, if anything, it's like I got a great night of sleep last night. And so I'm like fully awake and rested and full of vim and vigor and vitality. And I don't really know how to function like that. So I just feel all askew, all ski-wampus, as my wife would say. I saw the greatest television show last night. I mean, it was the best show that I have seen in a long time. Long time. And I would not have known about it. I got to thank both Bruce and Cheryl because they like double teamed me via text about it last night. I got a thing from Bruce saying, oh my God. And then like about 5 minutes later, I got a thing from Cheryl saying, Jesus, God, are you watching? I watched The Killing on AMC.
Oh, I'd heard about that.
Oh my God. It's incredible.
Okay.
It's so good. It's amazingly good. I mean, I was going to say that I don't want to oversell it, but I mean, AMC is on such a streak right now. I mean, Jesus. I mean, they got the Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, Mad Men, and now this thing. And I mean, if the pilot is any indication, and it seems like it must be, if the pilot is any indication, I mean, they are really batting 1,000 right now. It is, and I know it's based on a Danish television series that they have remade for America, and I haven't seen the Danish television series, so I have nothing to compare it to. It's really, really good. I mean, it's got a great cast too. It's got the lead actress, I believe, is what's her name, the lead the girl from Winter's Bone. I'm almost sure that it's the redheaded girl who is the star of Winter's Bone. I could be wrong about that. It's got Callum. Was it Callum Keith Rennie? Is that his name?
Yeah. Callum,
he was Lou Ashby in the second series of Californication, and he was what's his name? He was the Cylon that held
that held Starbuck captive.
Okay, yeah, I know who you're talking
in the
about.
Second yeah, it's got that guy. It's got Michelle Forbes, who I love. Michelle Forbes from Homicide and from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Something. Star Trek.
Some Star Trek.
It's got a great, great cast. And it is, I mean, and it's very clearly influenced. It takes place in Seattle. And it's a very atmospheric show, very bleak. There are a couple of shots that are obviously, I mean, I would, this sounds so corny to say, but I would go so far as to say that they are an homage. There are a couple of shots that are very obviously an homage to Seven. There's one sequence in particular where and I'm not spoiling anything here, but because these happens in like the first however many seasons, but the whole series basically is 18 episodes, and each episode is one day in a murder investigation. So it's not like 24, but it is sort of like that. Each day is an episode, and so it's 18 episodes, 18 days in a murder investigation of a young girl. There's a sequence where they're interrogating the two parents, or they're questioning the parents of the murdered girl, and they replicate shot for shot a scene from Seven, where the camera starts looking in a side view of interrogation room number one with cop number one talking to the dad. And then the camera slides to the left and it moves from interrogation room one to interrogation room two. And it's a mimic of a scene where Somerset is interviewing a guy and the camera moves to the left and it switches to where Mills is interviewing a guy in Seven. There's a couple of shots that are very clearly inspired by the movie Seven, as is a little bit of the writing of the lead characters. The lead character is a female homicide investigator who is not about to retire, but she's about to move to another city, and this is a case that she gets just as she set it out of the door, and she is partnered with a guy who has just come from I think Vice, and the dynamic between the female lead and the male lead is very, to my mind anyway, very obviously modeled on the dynamic between Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt in Seven.
Okay.
But in a way that doesn't feel like a ripoff at all. It very much does feel, because you realize that movie is, how old is Seven? 15 years old?
Yeah.
You realize that we're now living in a world where somebody could have been 15 when they saw that and is now a 30-year-old creating TV series.
It's an actual homage to a classic film.
I think because we're old. So there are a couple things that are obviously taken from Seven, but I got to tell you, there are some of the most – and you know what I mean when I say this, and this is a style that Fincher has made all his own, the something being horribly beautiful, where you look at it and you go, this shouldn't be beautiful because it's like a dead body or it's a swamp or it's – some bleak, disgusting, mold-covered basement, but it's beautiful the way it's lit and shot. There are some shots in this that are among the most beautiful things. I get chills actually just thinking about it. Some of the most beautiful things I've seen on television. There is a – and I won't say what it is, but there's a sequence that takes place late at night where they are searching for a body. And it's nighttime, so they have to illuminate it with spotlights. There is a sequence where they're looking for a body at night using spotlights, and you see it up close, and then you see it from far away, and it's just one of the most haunting images I've ever seen in a television program. And there's no special effects, there's no whatever. It's just somebody went, hey, what if we set up the shot this way? It's really good, and it seems to be steering clear of cliche for the most part. There are no like cringy moments. I mean, once you get past the whole like, I'm about to retire. Oh, here's a case on my way out the door. Oh, and I've got a new partner who's got to learn the ropes. Once you get past that, which even again they handle very well, it's really good. I mean, it's as good a show as I've seen on television in several years. If the first episode or two is anything to go by, because I think they paired the first two together into one sort of super pilot.
Yeah.
But The Killing on AMC, if you haven't watched it, it's really, really good. I recommend it like 1,000%. It is one of those shows. It's so good. I described it as being sort of beautifully horrible and horribly beautiful, but instantly addictive. I am now instantly sort of not sad, but just the thing of like, I want the next episode like now. I mean, it kills me. It's killing me that I have to wait a week for the next episode. But you must watch The Killing on AMC. So I strongly recommend it. We got to end this. We'll be back later on today at funemploymentradio.com with Greg Nimbler and Sarah X. Dillon. And tomorrow with Legion of News at noon, and then another fine installment of this radio program. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News show, followed by an encore of The Rick Emerson Show, and so forth. Thank you for listening and spreading the word. It is always appreciated and so forth. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So we thank you kindly. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we appreciate your fine patronage. It is Monday, April 4th, 2011. And thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.